We are holding on Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, the fifth line. Continuing on the topic of the non-kosher brews that I mentioned in the Torah. So we went through, so far, the Gemara had identified a couple of them and talked about, we talked about some where you have very similar species, some of which are osur and some of which are mutter. So now the Gemara continues to talk about a number of the ones that are mentioned in the Pesukim and identifying them with identifying them based on their characteristics. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Sholach, among the non-kosher birds listed over there, is one called Sholach. Zeh Shoyla Dogim Minayam, this is a bird that pulls out fish from the sea. So the word Sholach is related to the word Shoyla. Rashi explains that it's Ored Hamayim, which literally means the crow of the sea. Which they say, then that means the cormorant. The word cormorant in English actually comes from a couple of Latin words that literally mean the crow of the sea. And so that is what it does actually. It dives into the water and catches fish. And duchifas, and in fact, actually the Targum, and in fact, Rashi on the Chon Chomish points out that Targum Unkelus translates it sholi nuna, which means the same thing. It means pulls out fish. Duchifas, you have another one further down the list. Duchifas is called, so-called Shehoidoi Kofus. Its glory is tied. So Rashi explains its glory is the crest on its head, and it's very thick. It looks as though it's folded over into the onto the head and tied over there. So Rashi over here explains it's a large bird, the size of a chicken. And Rashi gives a French translation, which translates as the wild peacock. So Achronim point out that the peacock itself, there were various communities that had a Masorah that's kosher, so therefore we'd have to be referring over, that's why Rashi over here Dafka mentions the wild peacock. With that said, on Chumash, Rashi brings a whole different rendering of it. Rashi gives a different French word that's a bird called in English a hoopoe. It's a bird that has a very sharp, skinny beak, and it uses it to dig into the ground for worms and things like that, and it also has a big crest on its head. So two possibilities of what the duchifas is. So the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in the Braise, the duchifas, Shehoidei Kofos, the duchifas is so-called because it's hoidei, it's that duchifas, we're doushening du, Meloshen hoidei, it's glory, Kofos is tied, again, like doubled over and seems like it's tied to its head. The Zeru Shevi Shomer, the Beis Hamikdash. This is the bird that brought the Shomer to the Beis Hamikdash. You have the whole story, and a whole story in Gittin, where Shlomo needed the Shomer worm to be able to cut through the stones of the Beis Hamikdash. And to make a long story short, over there, he has Ashmedai arrested, and the king of the Shagim arrested and brought to him. Ashmedai tells him that there's a bird called Nagotura in Aramaic, which we're saying over here is the duchifas in Hebrew, that has been entrusted with the shomer, and it uses it to break open mountains to make them into fertile land, and then Shlomo sends somebody to trick the bird and be able to get the shomer away from it. So when we're saying over here that it brought the shomer to the Beis Hamikdash, not directly, but it means in other words that it used the shomer, and thereby Shlomo was enabled to get it to use for the Beis Hamikdash. So again, two possibilities. Here Rashi is translating it as a wild peacock, and in Chumash Rashi translates it as a hoopoe. Okay. Speaking of the sholoch that pulls fish from the sea, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, ki habichazi sholoch, when Rabbi Yochanan would see a sholoch, one of these cormorants, diving and catching fish, Omar, he would say on that, the pasuk mishpatecha tahoim rabba, your judgments, Hashem, are the great deep. That Hashem does his judgments even in the depths of the ocean, that Hashem decides which fish are going to be killed and eaten by this fish. So in other words, Rashi says that, like this, in other words, you have your judgment, you decided what fish are worthy to live and which one to die, and then Hashem provides the cormorant, which at the appropriate time will come and catch that particular fish and kill it. That's one explanation of Rashi. A second explanation of Rashi is, let's learn the second part of the Drasha, and then we'll talk about the two explanations of Rashi. So he said, when he saw Sholok, he would say, Mishpatecha Tahim Rabba, Ki Abichazi Nimola, and when he saw an ant, Omar, he would say the first half of that pasuk, Sidkoscha Kaharei Kale, your righteousness is like the mighty mountains. So it actually has two explanations. One is that it means that even a little tiny creature like an ant is just as much alive, and Hashem provides for it just as much as larger creatures. So that's the Tosfa, Kahare Kael, even like the mighty mountains, which Hashem looks after, just equally amount, just equally as much Hashem looks after the tiny ant. And then Mishpatecha Tzohim Rabbah would be about the cormorant and the fish, that when, again, when Hashem decides that a particular fish is time to die, then Hashem can send the cormorant to catch it and kill it. Then Rashi brings another explanation. The ant, you say, tzidkoscha kaharei kale, in the sense it doesn't have to work that hard for its food. So tzidkoscha, Hashem does a tzedakah with it, that it finds its food very easily. On the other hand, Mishpatecha Tzohim Rabbah, on the other hand, there are creatures that Hashem, you deal with much more strictly, and you make them work hard for their food, such as the shalach, which has to dive into the water to get its food, to get its fish. There's a famous thing that's there was a famous machloikus in Jewish literature over hundreds of years on the question: is there hashgacha pratis on individual creatures? Human beings, we say, are definitely under Ashgacha Pratis. But do we say, for example, that there's Ashgacha Pratis on every individual fish and every individual ant and even leaf of a tree? The Rishonim talk about it. They bring such an idea, but most of them don't really like that idea. They talk more about Ashgacha Klolis, that there's a general Ashgacha on the species. But then the Baal Shem Tov came and made it more mainstream that there's Ashgacha Pratis, that in fact Hashem does look after every single detail. Famously, even that a leaf falls off a tree, there's meaning in it, that Hashem did it for a certain purpose. And one of the proofs for it is our Gemara, where we see that Hashem looks after every individual fish and every individual ant and every individual cormorant and provides them what they need. The Rebbe even comments in a Sicha in Chelek Zion that's the deeper meaning of, we're saying that this bird pulls fish out of the sea because of this bird, because of what we see, how Hashem deals with this bird and with this fish. That allows us to pull out of the sea, to pull out of obscurity, a fact that we wouldn't have known otherwise, the fact that Hashem looks after every creature in detail.
That's a question, Alexander.
Yeah.
That such a question should be asked when we know that, for instance, Titus was killed by a mosquito, and Hashem created a mosquito just for that.
Well, it doesn't mean that Hashem created the entire species of mosquitoes for that. No, there's no question, obviously. Even the Rishonim, who generally don't hold of Hashgacha Pratis, as far as animals, they agree there's Hashgacha Pratis on people, and certainly a notorious Rasha like Titus. There's no question there's Hashgacha Pratis for him to get exactly what he deserves. But we're talking about more generally, like this, for example, a cormorant catching fish. On the face of it, you could argue, is Hashem determining the fate of this particular fish, or is in general Hashem created cormorants, Hashem created fish, and B'derech HaTeva, a cormorants catch fish, but not necessarily every individual one. But here again, from the Gemara and Rashi, here it comes out that yes, in fact, Hashem is looking after and paying attention to every particular fish and every particular cormorant, what should be with it. Okay.
The world couldn't stand without every single feature.
Right. Well, that's what we're saying. Until about Kentish times, it wasn't generally accepted in the Jewish world that there's some feedback over there on your end, by the way, when I'm speaking. I'm not sure why. But that's the point. Until the Baal Shem Tov, it wasn't generally accepted that there is this concept of Hashgacha Pratis on every individual creature. The Baal Shem Tov made that concept more mainstream, and now it's generally accepted in the Jewish world. Let's go on. Continuing on different kinds of kosher and non-kosher birds, the Gemara continues, Omer HaMemer, Lakni u'Batni Sharyan. There were birds called in Aramaic, Lakni and Batni, such those birds are mutter. What about other ones that are called Shaknoi u'Batnoi? There are other ones that have very similar names, Shaknoi and Batnoi. So those, it depends, says HaMemer. Mokim Shinagu Lechol Oichlin, Mokim Shinagu Shloi Lechol Ein Oichlin. In places where they have the minig to eat it, they can eat it. In places where they have the minig not to, then they can't. Since when does it depend on minig? Either these birds are kosher or they're not kosher. And the answer is A. Yes, it does in fact depend on different places. But like Kasha, because there's no contradiction. Hoba Astra, the Shriki Peres Vosnia, Hoba Astra, It depends whether it's a place where the Peres and Osnia are common. As we learned a couple of dafim ago, the Peres and Osnia are the second and third birds on the Torah's list of non-kosher birds. We said that the Peres and Osnia are not found in settled and civilized areas. So now, in places where the Peres and Osnia are common, now the concern is that the Shaknoi and the Batnoi might be subspecies of Peres and Osnia, and therefore, and the problem is they only have one sin in Tara, and therefore we have to be concerned, as we learned before, the Peres and Osnia have only one sin in Tara out of the four, and therefore maybe the Shaknoi and Batnoi are that. On the other hand, in places where the Peres and Osnia are not common, then therefore there's no problem in such places that the Shaknoi and Batnoi over there are likely to be subspecies of Peres and Osnia. So then we're back to they have one simen, and we know, as we learned in the Gemara before, that there's only Peres and Osnia have one simen, have one simen Tara. All the other non-kosher birds, well, so we had the Nesher has zero, we said, the Peres and Osnia have one each. And all the other ones have, then we said the raven has to the Urdiv, whether we translate it as raven or whatever, the Urdiv has two, and then all the other ones have three. So therefore, we're back to that we learned before on Daf Samach Aleph that when you have a bird that has only one simen Tara, as long as you know it's not one of those, then you know you're okay. So therefore, so that's why in some places they can eat them, some not. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says, wait a minute, the fact is that, what do you mean? If there's a concern that they might be the Peres and Osnia, then what do we care whether the Peres and Osnia or the known Peres and Osnia live in this area or not? No, what it is they are mutter, but no, what it means is, they're definitely not Peres and Osnia. But in places where the Peres and Osnia are common, because these birds, the Shaknoi and Batnoi, closely resemble the Peres and Osnia, and people might confuse them, so therefore they don't eat them to be on the safe side. In places where the Peres and Osnia are not common, then they don't have any concern, and they eat these Shaknoi and Batnoi. Again, what those birds are exactly is a whole nother question. What the Peres and Osnia themselves are, again, other than the identities of a lot of these birds are uncertain, which is why ultimately, as we learned, we don't eat birds except with a Masorah, that they're kosher. The Ramban, by the way, interestingly, at the end of the sugya, goes into. He says he actually examined a number of birds that he was able to get a hold of. He started with the ones that can definitely be identified as being among the non-kosher birds. So, for example, he says. As far as the Urdiv, he said, here, Tosfos had brought up a point previously on Daf Samach Beis that maybe the Urdiv is not the crow because it doesn't seem to have all the characteristics that the Gemara mentions of it. But the Ramban says that he checked and found that the crow, there's no question, he says there's at least one subspecies of it that matches all the descriptions that we have of it in various Gemaras and Midrashim, including in our Sugya as well. So there's no question that it's it. And he checks and finds how many simonim it has. And similarly, he goes and checks, for example, he says he went and checked an ostrich. He said also there's no question based on characteristics that it said, for example, it mentions, and saying the Gemara mentions in some places that the Bas Hayana, which is, we're going to talk about it soon in the Gemara, is one of those, is a bird that swallows rocks and glass and things like that. And in fact, the ostrich is known to do that because it has a large stomach. It's not able otherwise to fully digest its food, so it eats things like that. It swallows things like that so they can help grind up the food in its stomach. So again, he says he went and examined that, and he says a couple of other birds as well. And based on that, he concludes that the explanation that we learned earlier in the Sugya about the Nesher has zero, the Peres and Osnia have one, the Orev have two, and all the other ones have three simone tara, he says it doesn't really work with his observations of some of these non-kosher birds. So he learns the other way around. He learns like an explanation of Rav Moshe and Rav Yosef that we touched on a day or two ago, which is the other way around. The Gemara is saying the Peres and Osnia have most of the simone tumah, the Orev has two, and most of the other ones only have one. And therefore that fits better with his observations that a number of these birds that he finds that he examined taka have only one simen to only one or have only one simen tahara. Okay. Onward. The Gemara continues, Omar Abaya, kui v'kakui asuri, there are two types of birds that are called in Aramaic, kui and kakui, those are also kakuosa, but then there's another one that has a very similar name called kakuosa, sharia. that kind is mutter. Again, we can go and try to figure out what kind of broods those are, but whatever the case, they have very similar names, but you should know that two of them are also, and one of them is mutter. On the other hand, he continues, Ma Rava, Malka Ilava. On the other hand, in the West, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, they held that the third one, the Kakawasa, is also Osirti. They would actually give Malkus for it. They held it's Osir Menatorah. The Kodolo Takavasa, they had a different name for it. They call it in Eretz Yisrael, they call it Takavasa. The Gemara continues. Tananabanan. Twice in lists of creatures, the Torah mentions a creature called Tinshenes. Among the broods, or we should say actually, when we say broods, really, what we should really translate them as flying creatures. We're going to talk soon about that. One of the creatures on the list is a bat. Now, bats are not broods; they're mammals. They have wings and they fly. But nevertheless, Torah considers them oif, considers them broods. Even though anatomically they're not birds because they fly, so really oif is better translated as flying creature. Anyway, you have the Tinshemes mentioned among them. Then you have, a little while later, when it lists the Shmona Shrotzim, eight small creeping creatures, it also mentions the Tinshemes among them. So Tana Rabban, we learn in Hebrew, Tinshemes is Bo'us Sheba Oifus. The Tinshemes is the bo'os, bavas, or however it's pronounced, among the broods. That word bo'os and bavas, the Marshal and then Maran explain that it means the disgusting one. It's a bird that has a very, very disgusting, odd look to it. So in that case, then Rashi says that it would be a type of owl. Further on, Rashi gives another explanation that it would be the bat. In any case, it's like a very, every creature Hashem created for its purpose, and in that sense it's beautiful, it has its proper form, but nevertheless, to our eyes, these creatures, certain kinds of owls, and certain kinds of bats look very ugly and scary, kind of. A different explanation is that boys, or bavas, whatever, means a nighttime bird, which again fits with both of those, both owls and bats are nocturnal. Now, after I'm a boris shiba oifus, so you're saying that the tinshemes is a boris among the broods, or in el a boris for shiba shrotzim. Maybe the tinshemes over here is actually the boris among the shrotzim. Namely, in other words, that there's a creeping creature on the ground, also called tinshemes, as we're going to talk about soon, which it actually identifies as the mole. Some identify it as the mole, some as a different species called a mole rat, and there's a couple of possibilities what it is. In any case, so maybe the turtle is telling you that that particular one, if a person were to eat it, he would be chayiv for eating as if it was a non-kosher bird. So the answer is no. Amarta say ulaman mishloishas midas shatur and dreshes behem. You can learn that it's not so, considering the 13 midas with which the turtle is doushin, namely one of them is dovar alam and minyani. The 12th of them is dovar alam and minyani, that we can learn the meaning of something in turtle from context. The context is the pasuk is listing the non-kosher birds. Afkan bid oifus, the same way the tinshemes that's listed among the birds must be some kind of bird or at least some kind of flying creature. So therefore, again, either a type of owl or a type of bat. The Gemara continues. Taninami hochi. Then we learn taninami gami shrotzim kai gavna. There's a similar brisa about shrotzim as well. Well, again, when it lists the Shmona Shrotzim, various small land creatures that have either no legs or very short legs, so there also you have the last one on the list is Tinshemes. So again, Boris Shabashrotzim, it's the boys among the crawling creatures. Again, boys or bavas, whatever, means either ugly, as a, you know, these creatures are not exactly handsome to our eyes, or it means nocturnal. Anyway, it's the one among the shrotzim that has that characteristic. After I'm a boris shiva shrotzim, so you're saying that it means that among the shrotzim, I'm a boris shiva oifus, maybe it means that among the shmona shrotzim there's one flying one, and it's that one, the owl or the bat. So again, amarta, again, say ulaman, mishloish ha-semidus, shatur and adreshus behem, you can learn to the contrary, considering the 13 midas, a shatur that the Torah is doushin with dava alam menyane, where one of them is you learn something from context, ba-marakas medaba b'shrotzim, the Torah is talking about shrotzim, various small land animals, afkan b'shrotzim, the same way over here, the tinshemes over there is one of the shrotzim. So that's what Rashi points out then, that according to the first explanation, though, the tinshemes among the broods and the tinshemes among the land creatures don't really have anything in common except that they're both nocturnal. But if we have the other possibility that tinshemes among the broods is actually the bat, and Rashi actually on Chumash gives only that translation, then it fits much better, because then indeed it does resemble the mole on land. Okay. In fact, both of them, after all, don't. Both of them are nocturnal. Both of them have very poor night vision. But they have other heightened senses, etc. Okay. So the Gemara goes on. Omer Abaya, Boris Sheba Oifus. When we say this Boris among the birds, and we're saying that's what the Torah calls Tinshemus. So Kipus. So in our language, in Aramaic, or in Lashon Kodesh, in later Lashon Kodesh, Abaya says it's called Kipus, which again Rashi says the two possibilities. It means an owl or it means a bat. Boris Shabashratzim Kurpadori is what's the Boris Shabashratzim is what's called an Aramaic Kurpadori, which again is a mole or a mole rat or one of or some other burrowing creature like that. Okay. More identifications of birds that I mentioned in the Torah. I'm gonna be Huda. Kos Zuakuk. One of the ones listed in the non kosher birds is the Kos. So Rabbi Huda says that's what's known in later Lashon Kodesh as Kuk. The Oroch gives a different gives a kick with a yud, and in fact a Gemara in Shabbos mentions that it was a type of bird from which they could extract extract oil. Many birds have oil in them that they use to clean their feathers, but I guess there's one particular kind that has more oil than normal, and they would use it for that purpose. So one possibility that's been brought up is maybe it's a pelican. With that said, though, the Rishonim will point out the Rabbi Yonah Ibn Janach, one of the Rishonim who wrote a lot on Hebrew grammar and vocabulary and whatever, he points out that there are psukim that refer to the kos as being in the desert, so it wouldn't really fit with the idea of it being a pelican or some such bird. So therefore, if there are other possibilities that have been brought up, it might be another type of owl, or it might also be the cuckoo. In which case, if it was a cuckoo, then it would have the name of it in English. Cuckoo would be very similar to the word cook in our Gemara. Anyway, another one, Rabbi Yehuda says, Rocham, another one that's listed in the Torah, is called Rocham. So, Zushrakrak, this is the bird that's called Shrakrak. As the Gemara is going to say soon, that's the kind of noise that it makes. Again, there are a few possibilities that Rishonim and Achronim bring up to discuss to what the Rocham is. One thing is a couple of Rishonim point out that a lot of these names have very similar names in Arabic, and since Arabic and Lashon Kodesh are related languages, then maybe we can use the Arabic name to reconstruct what the Hebrew one is in that case. In Arabic, the word Rocham, or however it's pronounced in that language, is a type of vulture. On the other hand, others point out that the Gemara is going to talk about now that it makes a sound, it makes a shrieking sound like shrak-rak, and vultures don't do that, so there's a different possibility that's been brought up, that it may be a bird that's called in English a roller. Anyway, why is this bird called Rocham? Which related to the word Rachmanos, when the Rocham comes, then Rachmim comes to the world. Marsha points out that actually this is a migratory bird. This is a bird that spends time in Eretz Yisrael and then it flies south during the winter. So meaning, in other words, it passes through Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of the rainy season, Tishrei time. So therefore, like, when you see the Rocham coming through, then it heralds that rain is coming to Eretz Yisrael, meaning that Hashem is having Rachmanus on the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael and giving them rain. Okay. So Omer Bibi Barabaya, Behudi Yosef Amidi. However, that would only apply if this Rocham bird perches on something, but Ovid Shrakrak, and it makes the Shrakrak sound a bit. If it's just flying through, then it doesn't mean much, but if it's actually perching on something and then giving forth its call, then you know it means that Rachmim is coming to the world, in particular, as Maharsha says, rain. Ugmiri, now we also have the Kabbalah, the E Yosef Ara, that if this bird were to perch on the ground, now normally it perches on something, like Rabbi Barabaya said, if it actually perches directly on the ground, the Shurik, and it makes that same noise, that Shrakrak, then Osim Mashiach, then it's a herald that Mashiach is coming. So Marsha explains, in other words, from practical experience, they learn that the Rocham is a herald of rain. But now also we have the Kabbalah that if it goes beyond its normal nature and then perches on the ground and makes the shrakrak sound, then it means Mashiach is on his way. Shenema, as we find in the pasuk, we're whistling a shrakrak sound like that is associated with Mashiach. The pasuk says, Hashem says, Eshrik alahem va'akadzeim. I will whistle to them and I will gather them. Meaning Hashem is saying there's going to come, when Mashiach comes, very appropriate now for Shavuos v'Tavos, that Hashem is going to, so to speak, whistle and make a noise, and that's going to, and everybody's going to know that it's time to return to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, so we see that this whistling and paired together with Racham, with the mercy of Hashem that the Racham represents, then therefore it means that Mashiach is coming. But the Gemara says, Omelet of Adab Ashimi the Ma'barav Ijoy, Vahahudi Yosid Beit Tarva. Why? It once happened that it actually happened that a Racham like that went and sat in a plowed field, Vishorak, and it started making a shrakrak noise, and instead of Mashiach coming, Vahosid Golo, instead of a rock fell down from heaven, and broke his brain and killed it. So Mashiach didn't come, and the bird was actually killed. So what do you mean? So Malba Rav Yehuda says, "Ahu baida haba." That one was a liar. This one was a. So he was lying. He was giving forth this noise. He was doing this thing and giving forth his noise at the wrong time, at a time when in fact, Mashiach was not ready to come yet, and therefore he got punished for it. Min Hashemayim, and therefore he got his head broken by a rock fell down from Shemayim and killed him. Rabbeinu Gershom gives a different explanation. Ahu baida haba, that wasn't actually a racham. That was a different creature. That was a different bird that resembles a racham. So there's a lot of interesting discussion about what exactly is going on in this Gemara over here. Why a particular bird going and making a noise like that should be a herald of Mashiach. The Maharal gives an explanation. First of all, birds are more sensitive because after all, they fly between the earth and the heaven. Therefore, they're able to give us messages from Shemayim more so than other kinds of creatures. So now he says the Racham then represents Rachmanos, and its name Racham represents that. This Shrakrak, he explains, Shin, Resh, Kuf are three letters that are consecutive in the Aleph Beis, but they're in reverse order. So they have the same letters as Kesher. So this happens that he represents Rachmanos, Benafshek, Shura Benafshek, and then it means Dafkin near the end of the Aleph Beis, because it means it represents that there was, that the, it means that there was first a disconnect, and now everything is tied together, and it goes backwards, like it's going back towards one, like you have the numbers as you go backwards, and the Aleph Beis have smaller and smaller values. So therefore, as you're going from Shin, which is 300, to Resh, and then to Kuf, represents going more and more back to one. And it goes so that's why we're saying that this kind of thing represents that Mashiach is on his way, but only when it's on the ground, representing that it's bringing this Rachamim down here to earth. And then we're saying that there was this one time. So look, Maharal says that it doesn't mean that this is an absolute thing. It's sometimes this kind of segula will work, and sometimes not. So therefore, now this bird was trying to herald it with its cry, and now we're saying that instead it did something unusual, and instead something unusual happened, that a stone fell down from Shemayim and killed it. So sometimes, in other words, you have animals or birds that act normally than the usual way, which is considered a sheker. But other than that, when it's not a sheker, when there comes a point when it is the true thing, and then in fact it means that Mashiach is coming. A couple of other interesting things about that as well is that the bird sitting on the ground represent that. Also, there's an excellent, interesting explanation from a rav named Rabbi Salal Zev Shafran. He explains that also that it also represents the going back, as Maharal says, going back from larger numbers to smaller, back to one, represents bringing more actors and Abbas Yisrael into the world, which we know the second Beis Mikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. So therefore, Shrak represents going back and coming closer and then bringing more and more actors to one another. And when that comes into the world and actually comes onto the ground at the ground level, then it means Mashiach, and then the Jewish people are going to be connected together and then Mashiach is going to come. Eshrik alehem ba'akab, same, then Hashem will whistle to us and we will all be gathered together through this actors that will come among the Jewish people. One other interesting thing in that regard is the Torah brings that in Shabbos morning davening in Shabbos Musaf, we have the middle bracha begins Tikanta Shabbos with Tisikom Nisaha, and it goes in reverse Aleph Bay's order. So it also fits with this idea. Those first four letters, Tof Shin Resh Kuf, spell out Tishrik, you will whistle, and so it represents, it's a tefillah to Hashem, that in the schus of keeping Shabbos, we know the Geula is going to come for one thing, in the schus of keeping Shabbos, and therefore we begin the middle bracha of Musaf with hinting at Tishrik, Hashem, whistle already, and bring us out of Golos. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Orev ze Orev. Here's another bird on the list of non-kosher birds. When it says Orev, means Orev, which the Gemara is going to ask, what does that mean exactly? Eis kol ha-Orev, when the Pasuk says, the actual Pasuk says, Eis kol Orev l'minoi, it says all the Orev according to its kind. So you have two ribuyim over there, Eis kol and l'minoi. So Eis kol means l'hobi Orev ha-imki. That comes to include the imki Orev, which we're going to define soon in the Gemara what that is. Laminoi means lahavi orev hababer rosha yonim, and laminoi comes to include the orev that comes with the head that comes at the head of doves. The Gemara is going to explain soon. Doesn't mean that it leads doves around. It doesn't have a different meaning. We'll see in a couple of lines. But first, so let's analyze what this braisa is saying. Omamar orev za orev. We're saying the word orev means orev. What do you mean? Alto kamon kori? Do we have the orev standing in front of us? What do you mean? How can the Braisa just say Orev without explaining what bird we're talking about? All this time, whenever we define one of the birds, we gave it a more clear definition. Here the Tana is just repeating the same name again. And in fact, when he says Ze Orev, the Tiferes Yaakov points out Ze is always Marabetz Boiv Omer. It's like you're pointing to it. We don't. The Tana is not pointing to an Orev at us to be able to tell. So Ela Ema, no. So rather, what you have to say is what the Tana means. Orev is Orev Uchma. With the word Orev in the pasuk, without specification, means the black raven. B'chenu Omer, as we find that the Orev is described as black in Shir Hashirim, in one of the Mishalim about Hashem and the Jewish people. Kvutzos of Taltalim Shchoras Ka'Orev. His hair is in curly locks that are black as a raven. So we see, in other words, that a raven is defined as black. So therefore, when the pasuk says Orev, then it means by default, it means the black raven. Then, ha'imki, now the Braisa then said that then the word eskol also comes to include that the odor of ha'imki is also not kosher. That means chivra. That means the white raven. Now, does that mean that it's completely, now why do we call it imki, which literally means the one of the deep one, v'chenu oimer, as we find by tzaras, umar'eu omek mina'or, we find that a white spot of tzaras on the skin is described as deeper than the skin, meaning not that it's actually deeper, it's flat with the skin, but k'marechamaha mukam minatzeil means like the way when you look at a patch of sunlight and it appears deeper than the shadows around it. So the same way, in other words, a white spot of tzaras appears deeper compared to the flesh-colored skin around it. So in the same way, this odor of imki then is white. The Ravid holds that it means that it's completely white. The Ramban actually here, this is one of the things where the Ramban went and checked various birds, and he says no, the odor of imki is not completely white. It means that it has white spots on it. So, in fact, he says that. It would seem to me, he argues, that any bird that's completely white cannot possibly be a species of Orev, because we said before, we just said that the definition of Orev is that it's black. Now, we did have before, we learned yesterday, we did have a machlokas about the snunis, about a type of bird, a swallow that comes in different colors, some of them being white. So what the Ramban is saying about a completely white bird not possibly being a min of Orev, then it's actually that subject to a machlokas in the Gemara earlier. Okay. Now, we said Orev abob rosh yoinim, when we said the raven that comes at the head of yoinim, at the head of doves, amara popol, tamed to osi bereish yoni, don't say that it means that it travels ahead of the doves, ela de domi reish of the yoina, it means that its head resembles in shape the head of a dove. So that's another kind of raven, which is not kosher. And here also the Ramban points out that he checked various kinds of ravens and found there are, in fact, he says there are some that are completely black, there are some that have white spots, and there are some that have dove-like heads, and therefore he says we can be certain, unlike, again, we learned yesterday that Tosfos is uncertain whether the Orev is actually the raven, but the Ramban says no question that it is. Okay. Next, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, another non-kosher bird on the list. Hanetz, when the pasuk says hanetz, ze hanetz, that means the bird that in our time is also called netz. Rashi translates it as a sparrow hawk. So first of all, Tosfos says here the Gemara doesn't ask why is it in front of us. It means, in other words, because here there's the Odev and there's the Odev HaImki. So we had to ask why is one more explicit than the other. Here there's only one type of bird called mates. So therefore, then obviously fine. The Braisa means what's called mates, and the Pasuk is also called mates in our time. But again, here where Rashi translates it as a sparrow hawk, then Tosfos objects that it doesn't fit with what we learned earlier in the Gemara about Rashi's own definition of Dodis. So Tosfos doesn't say in that case what the nates would be, but nevertheless, whatever it is. The Ramban again brings that in fact the nates, it brings proofs that it is in fact the sparrow hawk, and there are other, with that said, there are other Rishonim who translate a nate as a regular hawk. And then again it says Laminehu. Now it's the Torah says nates Laminehu, so again Laminehu means a related species, so Lahavi as Barchiria. That comes to include another bird called Barchiria. My Barchiria I'm gonna buy Shurinka. It's a bird that in Aramaic is called Shurinka. Somebody showed him identify as the falcon. Another one, Amr Yehuda, HaChasida. Another one on the list of non-kosher birds is the Chasida. Zudaya Lavana, this is a white daya. So we're going to talk about soon. And the Gemara, the daya, it may be a type of vulture, or it may be a type of whatever. So the Chasida is that. The Loma Nikoshma Chasida. Why is it called Chasida? Sha'osa Chasidu Sim Chavre Seha, because it does chesed with its friends, that it shares its food with them. There's a famous vote they say on that, non-kosher animals and birds. There's an idea that Amban talks about, other Mephoshim talk about, that Hashem doesn't want us to eat us, that Hashem doesn't want us eating the creatures that have bad natures. It's the nature that Hashem implanted in them, but relative to us, these are bad natures, and Hashem doesn't want us to absorb those bad qualities. So the famous question that's brought then, in that case, the Hasida does kindness with its fellows and shares its food with them, so why is it branded a non-kosher bird? So the famous answer that's given, because it only shares with its friends, nobody else, whereas a Yid has to be able to share and give tzedakah even to those people, even to people he doesn't know. What is the Hasida? So there you have a machloikas rishonim, a lot of Rishonim learn. Rashi brings it on Chumash, for example, that the Chasida is the stork. However, Rabbeinu Yerucham, an important Rishon, brings that actually that the stork is a kosher bird, and he mentions that there were communities in Spain and in Provincia in southern France that actually would eat it. So according to them, the Chasida would have to be some other kind of bird. The Rosh has a Truva on the subject, and he says, where I come from, the Rosh came from Germany, we never ate storks. I hear that there are people over here in Spain who eat them. The Rosh says, I don't know about this. I don't know if there's nowadays anybody who considers, I don't know if there are any kahilas nowadays that accept the stork as kosher. Ha'anofa, now when the Torah then continues, after a chasidah, it mentions ha'anofa, zudaya ragzonis. This is, so the chasidah that we said is the white daya. The anofa is the angry daya. Some identify it as a heron. So why is it called anofa? Na'efes would mean that it commits adultery with its friends, meaning that it's promiscuous. But on the other hand, Hagoyis Habach changed it shema anefes im chavreseha, that's angry with its friends. So unlike the Hasidah, which is friendly and full of chesed to its friends, the anofa acts in an angry way towards its friends. Again, some identify it as a bird called in English a heron. Now that we went through the identifications of a number of the birds, now let's talk more generally. So how many non-kosher birds are there in the Torah's list anyway? There are 24 species of non-kosher birds. Now, again, a min, when we say minim over here, we don't mean taxonomic species like you have in modern science. We've talked about a number of these types have subspecies and things like that. The Gemara is going to bring soon that some of them even have hundreds of subspecies among them that are all not kosher. What we mean is that however the Torah defines a min, there are 24 of them. So the Gemara says, Now, so Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chisda had reported this in the name of his father, that there were 24, that who in turn reported in the name of Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chisda, and then in the name of Rab. But now Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chisda asks his father Rav Chisda, you're telling me that there were 24 Dehecha, but where do we actually find 24? Again, we have the list in Parshas Shemini, and again, we have it in Parshas Re'ei. But in neither case do we seem to have 24. Eid Vayikra, do we mean the list in Sefer Vayikra Esrim Habu? Then you only have 20 words over there. Eid Mishneh Torah. And if you mean the one in Mishneh Torah and Chumash Devarim, Esrim Bechad Habu, then you only have 21. The chitema da dechivim b'vayikra v'lo k'sivim mishnah torah shad yalayu. You're going to say, okay, there is a discrepancy a little bit in the list between vayikra and devarim. Where in vayikra it mentions a bird called da, and it's not listed in devarim. So you're going to say shad yalayu is the fine. You have to add it to the list in chumash devarim. Akatu esim yitrein habu. That still gives you only 22. Where are we getting 24? Rav Chisda answers, Hochi Amar Avur De'imach Mishmei De'Rav. You should know that your grandfather, Rav Chanan Bar Rava, was Rav Chisda's father-in-law, and therefore Rav Chanan Bar Rav Chisda's grandfather. The Pashtus, I guess, we see then that Rav Chanan, the grandson, was named for his grandfather Rav Chanan. Your mother's father said Mishmei De'Rav in the name of Rav to explain that a few times in the list it says Lamina. Ha'anofa l'mina, ha'ayah l'mina, etc. So therefore, l'mina, l'mina, l'mino, l'minehu, and all those mean related species. Ha'reitan arba, so therefore that gives you another 4. So therefore, so you have 20 plus the 4 l'minehus gives you 24. So the Gemara asks the Hachi, Esrim v'shishavu. But wait a minute, then in that case we should have 26. Because again, we have 21 in Devarim, plus one that's not listed there but is listed in Vayikra, gives us 22, plus 4 Laminehu's or Lamina, gives us 26. So Amar Abaya, the answer is Da'a V'ra'a Ahasi. The answer is, in Vayikra, one of the birds listed as Da'a, in the same place in Devarim, instead it uses the word Ra'a, that's the same species. And it has to be, says Abaya di Sakhadadach, Tau Te Inun, if you thought there were two different species, Nechni, Mishneh Torah, Lois, Sufer Hodasa. Consider, what's the purpose of Mishneh Torah? What's the purpose of Chumash Devarim? Is to add, or in general, Chumash Devarim is Moshe reviewing the Torah for us, but in particular, in the section of the kosher and non-kosher birds and animals and whatnot, where the Chumash Devarim is there, and why is it repeating the whole thing again, is in order to add details that we didn't have in Chumash Vayikra, as we're going to see soon in the Gemara. So it's dafka coming in order to add, not to take away. So So why in Chumash Vayikra would it say da, whereas meanwhile in Devarim it would leave out da and instead write ra? Fine, it wants to add ra, which is not mentioned in Vayikra, but then it should mention both da and ra. Therefore, says Abaya, you see that the Torah refers to it by two names, ra, and it calls it da in Vayikra, and then in Devarim instead it calls it ra. We'll explain soon in the Gemara why it has it, why the Torah gives different names for it. Okay, the Gemara asks, Akati Esim Vacham Shahabu. Fine, that still leaves us with 25. Because again, you have 21 in Devarim, and then plus 4 Laminas, and that gives you 25. The answer is, Amar Abaya, Keshem Shah Ra, the Da, Ahasi, the same way as Ra and Daya and Da are the same thing. Aya, the Daya, Ahasi, the same way, the fact that it mentions Aya in both places, and it mentions Daya only in Devarim, is also the same thing. So let's quote the actual psukim. In Vayikra, the pasuk says, Ve'esa da'a, ve'esa ayah lamina. So on the face of it, da'a and ayah are the same thing. On the face of it, da'a and ayah are two different species. In Devarim, instead, it's v'ha'ra'a, ve'esa ayah, v'ha'daya lamina. So now Abaya is telling us that actually what it is ra'a, da'a from Vayikra and ra'a from Devarim are the same thing, and the same thing aya and daya are the same thing. So now that subtracts one, so it means that in Devarim even though in Devarim it mentions ha'aya v'hadaya, Abaya tells us those are actually the same. They're actually two different names for the same bird. And again, if you were going to say that they're two different birds, then again, we have to consider. Again, Mishnah Torah Devarim is coming to add to what we already knew from Chumash Vayitra. Now consider, in Vayikra, you have the word Lamina is attached to the word Aya. That's a Aya Lamina. The Aya, according to its kind, meaning the Aya and its subspecies. In Devarim, instead you have Aya without Lamina. Where do you have Lamina? By the word Vadaya. So therefore, says Abaya, Devarim is coming to add, not to take away from what we had in Vayikra, but rather to add, then why would it take away the word Lamina from Aya and instead put it on Daya? Lifted Lamina Adaya, then it should, Umayshna Hasan Dichtiv Lamina Adaya. Why is it in Devarim that it has the word Lamina on the word Daya rather than the Aya? Now the Shmamina Aya, the Daya Ahasi, therefore says Abaya, you see that the Aya and Daya are all the same thing. So now we have 24. So in Vayikra, you have a list of 20, and then you have four Laminas. Now, in Devarim, even though on the surface you have 21, really, in fact, you only have 20, as we're going to explain in a second, why in fact, the Torah does this. And therefore, again, four Laminas gives us 24. So it's the same list in both places. Well, the question is, well, then if Aya and Daya are the same thing, why indeed does the Torah list them as separately, Aya and Daya, there in Devarim? And for that matter, Tosfos points out, part of the question is also similarly, why does it say Da in one place and Ra is another place? So the Gemara answers Kiditanya. As we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, Ekrani Aya, on the face of it, the Torah could have just written Aya, Daya Loman Nemra, why does it say Daya, if we're saying that Aya and Daya are the same species, Kadesh Le Titzin Pishin Pelabaldin Lachlok, so that you don't give an opening to an argumentative person to argue and say that this is not a non-kosher word. Shaloi Tehe Ata Kore Aya, for who Kore Daya? You don't want. You're going to say, well, the Aya is a non-kosher bird. And this guy is going to say, well, my name for it is not Aya. I call this bird Daya. And therefore, it's not Osir. So he's going to argue that there are actually two separate species. And one is non-kosher and the other one is. Therefore, the Torah wants you to know. Apparently it was known in those days by two names. And therefore, the Torah writes both. So you don't want the other way as well. Also, after Koda Daya, well, who Koda Aya? Vice versa, you might have, if you call it Daya and say it's non-kosher, if the Torah hadn't written Aya, then he would say the Aya is kosher. L'chach kosher, Mishnah Torah, v'ha rov, as the Aya, v'ha Daya l'mina. Therefore, the Torah lists out the Aya and the Daya separately, telling you the two names that these species have. Now, so Tosfos points out then, in that case, why don't we do the same thing with Ra and Da? Why don't we have that also? We said Ra is in Devarim, Da is in Vayikra. Why not do the same thing? Why not have Da and Ra together? So Tosfos says because the fact is, again, we didn't want to have it in, in Mishnah Torah and Devarim, the Torah wants to specify all the names, but if the Torah mentioned Ra and Da together, then it would mean that it's actually adding a new species called Ra. With Aya and Daya, again, because of the word Lamina has been moved, then therefore it's clear that they're the same thing, as Abaya said, therefore there's no way that you can think they're two species. It's clear that the Lamina, which went on Aya in Vayikra and is going on Daya in Devarim, it's clear that Aya and Daya are the same thing, but Ra and Da, you don't have that. There's no Lamina for them. So therefore, if we had them together, Da and Ra, then you would think that in Devarim it's adding a new species, which is not, in fact, mentioned in Vayikra, and it's for the same reason, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that the Torah repeated this whole thing in Chumash Devarim in order to teach us new details. So you would have said, fine, in details that the Ra is also where it didn't say it in Vayikra. So it couldn't mention them together. Instead, it mentions one in one place and one in the other, and therefore it becomes clear that they're the same, bird. So the Gemara says, Mesa, the Gemara says, though, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me the Ra and the Da are the same thing, but a Braisa says, Lama Nishnu, why indeed is this whole section repeated from Parshas Shemini? Why is it repeated again in Parshas Re'eh? So the Vehema Mepnash Sua. In the case of animals, it's repeated because of the Shua. We talked about the Shua the other day. It's literally Shua means split or cleft. So we talked about in Masechta Nidah, the Gemara has a machlokas whether it means a mutant animal like a Siamese twin that has a that has a shnei gabin or shnei shedros, two spines and two backs. So like fused Siamese twins, or whether it's a separate species. We talked about that there are some achronim that identify it with a creature that lives in South America called a peccary, which has a deep groove down its back. Anyway, that point about Shesua, that animal, is not mentioned in Chumash Vayikra, and therefore, for that reason, the Torah mentioned the whole part about the animals again in Chumash Devarim in order to tell us that detail. And over Oifus, now you would say, why didn't the Torah write it in Vayikra in the first place? So you could say, because in Vayikra, the Torah doesn't have to list every kind of non-kosher animal, but in Devarim, where Moshe is clarifying the Torah for the Jewish people, so he has to add this one as well. Obviously, when we say add, we don't mean he didn't add it on his own. It's all Shinim and Daberes. But in other words, Hashem decided that at that point it needs to be clarified for them by adding in the positive. And therefore, because of that, the whole section is rewritten for that. Over Oifus, now by the birds, why was it repeated? Because the Ra is mentioned in Devarim and not in Vayikra. Now, my love, now doesn't that mean, since we're saying that the Shesua is a new kind of thing that is not mentioned at all in Vayikra, and we have to be, and we're being told for the first time in Chumash Devarim that it's Osir, whether we identify the Shesua as a mutant animal or whether we identify it as the peccary or whatever, either way, it's something new. So you would think, Oifus Nami Lo Isufi, by the same logic, the bird also, if the Torah is giving you a name of a bird in Devarim that it didn't have in Vayikra, then it would mean that it's a new kind of bird. So what are you telling me? Ra and Da are the same thing. Based on this, but I said, it sounds like Ra is a new kind of bird. And then we're back to the question. Then in that case, we have 21 species in 20 species in Vayikra and 20 in Devarim. But in Devarim, instead of Da, it has Ra. We would say that Da and Ra are two different ones. And then we'd have 21 plus the Laminos gives us 25. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Hosam lo isufi. In the case of the Shesua, it's like adding something that we wouldn't have otherwise known. Ha'chala ferushi. But over here, it's only to explain that the Da has another name that's also called Ra. And for that matter, Rashi points out that the Braisa could have also said, by the same token, that the Torah also wants you to know that the Ayah and the Daya are the same thing, and therefore repeated the list for that to find the Braisa, the Gemara is mentioning one of two possibilities. But the point is, there is something new over there, not a new species, but clarifying the name of a creature that was already mentioned in Vayikra. Okay, the Gemara points out, however, this explanation that there are 24 Oifus Tmeim, and that Daya and Aya are the same thing, and that Ra and Da are the same thing. Pliga de Rabba Bohu. Rashi actually on the Pasuk says, let's learn the next few lines of Gemara, and then we'll talk about that. So the Pliga de Rabba Bohu, so this disagrees with Rabba Bohu. The Amar Rabba Bohu, Ra Zu Aya. Rabba Bohu says the Ra is identical with the Aya. So according to Rav, we have two birds that each go by two different names. We have one bird that's called the Da'a and also called the Ra'a, and we have another one that's called the Aya and also called the Daya. Rabbi Bohu says, no, Ra'a Zu Aya. The Ra'a is identical with the Aya. The Lama Nikashma Ra'a, why is it called Ra'a? For Ra'a B'Yosef, because it has very sharp vision. The Chenu Omer, as we find a Pasuk, describing in Eov, describing metaphorically the prosperity of stirring back in its good days, Nosiv lo yadoi oyet, it was a path that the ayets did not know. An ayet is a bird of prey, like an eagle or a vulture or something like that. So even predatory birds didn't know the ways over there. And then the same way robbers would never go and attack them. The eye of the ayah never saw it. So we see that the ayah has very sharp vision, and therefore we can say it's a chiddush. Lo shezafatu ein ayah. Even the keen visioned ayah was not able to see that. So Rashi on the pasuk over there represents that the ayat and the ayah metaphorically represent robbers and spies and things like that. They were complete peace and they never had any dangers from those. But the point is, the fact that the pasuk is using the ayah as a metaphor for sharp vision shows that the ayah has extremely sharp vision, and therefore, says Rabbi Bohu, therefore the pasuk also calls it ra. And Tana, we learn in a braisa, the ayah has such sharp vision that it can stand in Bogel and it can see a carcass of an animal all the way in Eretz Yisrael, hundreds of miles away. Okay, it's maybe a bit of a guzma, but the point is we're talking about, it's a bit of an exaggeration, but the point is that it means it's a bird that has very, very sharp vision. One possibility is they bring up it might be the bird called in English the buzzard, which in fact does have, it flies very high and in fact is able to see things very, very sharply and clearly even from a great distance. There's a vote on it from Mayor Shapiro. He says sometimes you have people like that nowadays who are like the draw in that sense. They stand in bubble. They stand in chutzlaris, and all they see is criticisms and faults and flaws in Eretz Yisrael. So like they look in Eretz Yisrael, and all they see is an individual. All they see is the carcass. Whereas we shouldn't be doing that. We should always be looking for the good qualities of Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't mean, of course, to sweep problems under the rug, but we shouldn't be focusing only on the negative like the ayah does. Okay. So now midra hainu ayah. Now since Rabbi Bohu is saying that the Ra is the Ayah, Mikal the Da Lab Hainu Ra. Then on the face of it, that would mean the Da is not identical with the Ra. Because if we assume, we're going to show that Rabbi Bohu disagrees with Rav on the number 24. But if we were to say that he agrees, then if he says that the Ra is the Ayah, necessarily he would have to say the Da is not the Ra. Because otherwise you'd be left with only 23. So in other words, Rashi says, the Gemara is bringing over here, when they first brought Rabbi Bohu's statement to the Beis Medrash, they were discussing, does Rabbi Bohu in fact disagree with Rav or not? We said that when they brought Rabbi Bohu's statement to the Beis Medrash, we had to figure out whether he's arguing with Rav. When the Gemara says before, Pliya, that it argues, then the Gemara is going according to the Maslana, that we're going to figure out that Rabbi Bohu is in fact disagreeing and holding there's only 23 species of non-kosher birds. But to begin with, the Gemara is giving us the dialogue, the discussion that brought to that conclusion. But the Gemara says no, again, because Mishnah Torah is here in order to add things, not in order to take away, to give us more details than we had before. So why in Vayikra would it say da, and in Devarim it would not say da? If according to Rabbi Bohu, Da is a species of its own, Ela Lakshma, I mean, a Da, the Ra, the Ayah, Achasi. Therefore, according to Rabbi Bohu, evidently, Da, Ra, and Ayah are all three names for the same bird. And therefore, the Torah gives different names in different places, but in fact, it's all the same bird. So now we understand, now we can understand that Rabbi Bohu is in fact arguing with Rab on the number of birds. If he holds that the Ra is identical with the Ayah, and again, it's called Ra because it has very short vision, then on face of it, shouldn't we have to say that the Daya then is not the Ayah? Because again, then we don't have 24. But again, but again, the word Laminehu was moved from the Ayah in Vayikra in Devarim, instead it's placed on the Daya. Evidently, you see from that, you see, according to Rabbi Bohu, that all four of them are actually different names for the same bird. So therefore, now that brings us to the maskana, that Rabbi Bohu is in fact disagreeing with Rav, because Rav is saying there are 24 kinds of non-kosher birds, whereas according to Rabbi Bohu, we can't say that. We would say, according to him, there are names listed over there that all come out to the same bird, and therefore it would come necessarily that there were, according to him, there would be only 23 species of non-kosher birds, not 24. Rashi on Chumash actually says it a little bit differently. Rashi says kind of a hybrid between them. Rashi says that three of these names, Rashi says Ra, Ayah, and Daya are all names for the same species. And again, like the Gemara had said before, because it goes by different names, and you don't want people to argue that it's not in fact the kind that's also. But that would still leave us with a list of 24, like Rav says, because then we would have, we're not subtracting one more, as Rabbi Bohu says. But on the other hand, we wouldn't be saying like Rav, it's not exactly like Rav either, there are two birds, each of which have two names, but rather there's one bird that has one name and one bird that has three names. Okay. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Tanya, Isi ben Yehuda Omer, Meir Ophis Tman Yesh Bemizra, there are 100 types of non-kosher birds in the east, V'kulan min Ayahen, all of them are subspecies of Ayah. When the Torah says, that's Ayah Lamina, and again we said before, V'ayah V'adaya Lamina, where we said according to both Rav and Rabbi Bohu, Ayah and Daya are the same, are two different names for the same bird, so now there are many subspecies of them that are included in Lamina. And the Gemara continues in this connection. Tony Avimi Breid Rabbahu, Avimi, the son of Rabbahu, taught a braisa. Zion Meis Mini Dogenheim. There are 700 types of fish. Of Rashi and Tosfos say that we're referring to non-kosher fish. There are 700 kinds of non-kosher fish. Ushmoina Meis Mini Chagovim. There are 800 kinds of locusts. Ola Ophis Ein Misper. As far as non-kosher birds, there's no limit. But the Gemara says, wait a minute, what do you mean there's no limit? Ophis Esrim Ba'arba'ava, we just said before that there are 24 species of non-kosher birds. Fine, and they include Luminehu, they include subspecies, but still, it can't be that there's an endless number. No, what the Braisa means is that among the kosher birds, there's no limit. There's an enormous number of kosher birds, but then the non-kosher ones, there's only the 24 that the Torah mentions, which, okay, many of them have subspecies, subspecies in within them. So Tosfos points out that it means, in other words, let's say, for example, you have a fish. Now we're going to learn in a couple of daftim that fish, for example, of course, they have to have fins and scales, but if you have a species that right now doesn't have scales and grows them only later in life, it will in fact be mutter. Or another example would be there are certain kinds of fish that lose their scales when they're caught. So now the point is, Tosfos says, it means only if you know all 700 of the non-kosher species and you know this is not one of them, then you would be able to be master it. Because it means what the Gemara is saying, that there's a maximum of 700 species of non-kosher fish. And the same thing as far as locusts, where again, you have one of the various simonim of locusts that we learned in the Mishnah, and we're going to discuss in more detail near the end of our parak, but they have to have those long jumping legs and wings that cover most of their body and so forth. And again, you can have, when they're juveniles, they may not have that yet, and they develop that only later. Same idea, in other words, is that the same idea is only if you know that it's not one of those 800 non-kosher species, only then can you eat it. So now Tosfos explains that the Machshavah was thinking that it means by the birds the same thing, that even if you know all the ones in the parasha, you won't be able to be mocked to any other one. But we said then what the whole point is. The Torah is telling us that there's only 24, and the answer is that no. A misra means as far as the Tahoris, that it means that so it's not so unlike the other ones that are talking about Tmei. Although the Bach argues over here that maybe in fact the 700 and 800 over here also refer to the Tehorim, maybe when the Gemara says that we're talking about the Tehorim, we don't mean just the birds, we mean in the end the 700 and 800 respectively refer to the number of kosher species. And he brings from a Medrash that says that mentions such a point. So why do we have the lists the way they are in the Torah? Tanya, Rebbe, I mean, we learn in a Braisa that Rebbe says, Goliv Yadua, Lifnei Misha Omer V'Hoya Olam, it's well known and revealed before Hashem who spoke and the world came into existence, Shebehema Tmeya Merubim in Atahoras, that the number of non-kosher land animals is greater than the number of Tahor ones. Lefich Mona Akasa B'Tahora, therefore the Torah lists the Tahor ones. The Torah lists only the 10 kosher species, because otherwise, if it had to give the list of the non-kosher ones, it would be much larger. Now, here, by the way, is a perfect example of how we see that a min in the Torah is not at all identical with what we think of as a min taxonomically. You have there's books on this subject of trying to identify the various animals and birds and whatnot mentioned in the Torah. There's a number of books and presentations on that subject by Rav Nosson Slifkin, and he points out that as far as what's known today to science, you have 172 species of kosher land animals. Would we actually be able to eat all of them? That would depend on the machlokas aposkim we talked about the other day, whether you need a masoda to eat animals or whether as long as they chew their cud and have split hooves and they're good. But in any case, you have on the face of it, there are 172 such species, and nevertheless, they're all included in what the Torah says, 10 species. So obviously, therefore, you have what the Torah considers a min is a much broader category than what modern science does. Anyway, it continues with Rebbe. And similarly, Goliv Yadur Lefnei Misha Omer V'Hoya Olam, it's also well known and revealed to Hashem, Sho'ifus Tahorin Merubim L'Atmeim, that when it comes to the birds, there are many more kosher ones than non-kosher ones, L'Fichach Mona Akasa B'Tmeim, and therefore the total list of the Tomei ones, and then we know that all the other ones are good. Mike Kamash Malon, so what is Rebbe telling us? Well, what's Rebbe's chiddush with that? Kedir Rav Huna Amar Rav, it's a Rebbe wants us to know, like what in a later generation, Rav Huna says, in the name of Rab. In other words, obviously, if there had been more, they would have been listed. So what's Rebbe's chiddush? So it means he wants to tell us that what Rav Huna said in the name of Rab, v'ami la omer Rav Huna, omer Rab mishum Rav Meir. Another version is that Rab in turn said it in the name of Rav Meir, lo odem yishana odem tamidim. Derech a person should always teach his tamidim in a short way, because when he teaches them in a brief way, then it's easier for them with fewer words, then it's easier for them to remember. So the same way, therefore, the total in each case, it gives us the shorter list so that it's easier to remember. The Ramban brings up an interesting point, though. Given that we started the sugya by talking about the four simone tara or simone tuma, as the case may be, and again, ultimately, what we said is that the Mishnah had told us that any non-kosher bird is not a predatory bird, and we know, we established in the Gemara earlier, that all the non-kosher birds are predatory except for either the peres or the osnia. So instead, the Torah said, the Ramban says, why did the Torah have to give us a list of birds? It could have said very briefly, any bird that's not dirtus, except for the plus the peres and the osnia, are not kosher. The same way, for example, the Torah tells us more briefly, any animal that has split hooves is kosher, except for the pig. Ramban answers because Judisa is not really so obvious. You can't always tell whether a bird is dirtus. Here we learned in the Gemara yesterday, for example, that there was a bird, the town of Gilta de Agma, which originally they thought was not dirtus, and then they discovered it is. So therefore, instead, the Ramban says, therefore, the Torah had no choice but to give us an actual list of birds, but it gave us the list of non-kosher birds because it's a much briefer list. So to round out this discussion about kosher birds, the Gemara tells us another detail about when you can eat a kosher bird. To eat a kosher bird, you need a masoras. If a person knows, for example, that if he remembers that an Adam kosher ate this bird, or his rebbe, or a trapper, who is also a Talmid Chacham, tells him that it's a kosher bird, then he's able to rely on that and be able to eat it. And continues Rebbe. In fact, a trapper is believed when he says that his teacher taught him that this particular kind of species is kosher. We mean a Jewish trapper. That's only provided that this trapper's teacher is actually familiar with all the different kinds of non-kosher birds and all of their names, because otherwise he may be mistaking one for the other. And of course, Rashi points out also earlier that it would also mean he has to know that it's not dirtus and it doesn't resemble an oif tome and so on and so forth. However, the Gemara says boyer of zera, rabbi chacham or rabbi tzayin. When you're saying that the trapper says my rebbe taught me that this bird is kosher, do we mean his rebbe as in a talmid chacham or rabbi tzayin? Or sometimes the word rebbe in Gemara terminology can just mean a master teacher. So does it mean, in other words, that his teacher had to have been a talmid chacham, or does it just mean his teacher is a known expert trapper? So which one is good enough for us to believe for this purpose? So the Gemara says, Toshman, the Amar Rabbi Yechanan, who should baki behenu b'shmeisehe. We said that he has to be familiar with them and with their names. Now we have the b'shlemi Rabbi Tzayad. If you say that, it means we're talking about a trapper, so somebody who's not necessarily a Talmid Chacham, but he knows his way ins and out, all the ins and outs of the bird's chakra. Then we understand that's his profession. So we can expect him to know all the birds and all their nomenclature and everything. Eli, I'm a rabbi chacham, but if you say it means his rebbe is a talmid chacham, v'shlem is shmayo gamer lahu. The names he'll have learned in the Beis Medrash, as we've been learning in the last couple of dafim. Eli, inhu miyada lahu, how he's going to know the birds themselves. The pashtus, he's not going around and examining all the different birds in the world. Eli, lab shmam in a rabbi tzayin. Therefore, it shows that Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that trustworthy, even when he says, my master teacher, the trapper, taught me about the different kinds of kosher and non-kosher birds, and I can recognize them. And the Gemara says, Shmamina, indeed we see it so. So we don't require that his Rebbe is a Talmid Chacham, we just require that his Rebbe, his teacher, has a practical zoological experience, or ornithological experience, to know which birds are which are kosher and which are not, and which ones bear what names, and then based on that, then the trapper can say, now my Rebbe taught me that this kind of bird is kosher, and we can accept that, and if he brings us such a bird, then we can shecht it and eat it. So again, we do have that concept of having a masoda nowadays, and you have, again, there are a number of birds that we know to be kosher, without any question, then you have the turkey we talked about before. There's a famous machlokas among the Achronim about what's the basis for saying that the turkey is kosher, given that it's native to America and there was obviously no Masoros on it. And then you have a number of other types of birds where various kahilas around the Mediterranean had Masoros that they're kosher, and therefore they would eat them. We talked before about the stork, that there were some kahilas that would eat it, and others that weren't. And nowadays also, there are various kinds of game birds and whatever, where there are certain kahilas, there are certain Italian kahilas and whatever have clear Masoros about them, but other Jewish communities do not necessarily.